Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Maitreya uvacha. Shutva Bhagavatam Pautram Amodata Ditir Bhrisham Putrayoscha Vadam Krishnad Viditvasin Mahamana Maitreya Uvacha Shrutva Bhagavatam Pautram Amodata Ditir Vrisham Putrayoscha Vadam Krishnad Vidit Vasin Mahamana Maitreya Uvacha.
The sage Maitreya said,
Shrutva,
by hearing
Bhagavatam,
to be a great devotee of the Lord.
Pautaram,
grandson,
Amodata,
took pleasure.
Ditti,
Vrisham,
very greatly,
Putrayoho,
of two sons,
Cha, also,
Vadham,
the killing,
Krishnad,
by Krishna,
Vidittva,
knowing this.
Asit
became
Mahamanaha,
highly pleased in mind.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada.
The sage Maitreya said, hearing that her grandson would be a great devotee and that her sons would be killed by Krishna, Ditti was highly pleased in mind.
Purport.
Ditti was very aggrieved to learn that because of her untimely pregnancy, her sons would be demons and would fight with the Lord. But when she heard that her grandson would be a great devotee and that her two sons would be killed by the Lord, she was very satisfied. As the wife of a great sage and the daughter of a great Prajapati, Daksha, she knew that being killed by the personality of Godhead is a great fortune. Since the Lord is absolute, his acts of violence and non-violence are both on the absolute platform. There is no difference in such acts of the Lord. Mundane violence and non-violence have nothing to do with the Lord's acts. A demon killed by him attains the same result as one who attains liberation after many, many births of penance and austerity. The word Bhrisham is significant herein, because it indicates that Ditti was pleased beyond her expectations. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the third canto, 14th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Pregnancy of Ditti in the Evening. Jaya and Vijaya, we're going to hear their story in the next chapter, are eternal associates of Lord Vishnu. Although those who complain that you can't fall down from Vaikuntha can be satisfied that they were at the gateway of Vaikuntha, they weren't inside. They were stationed outside. Although that's, I think, a feeble argument. They came down from Vaikuntha, cursed by the Kumaras, and that curse was sanctioned, it was seconded by Lord Narayan himself. He says, I think this is a good idea. I'm not going to undo the curse. You should go.
And they have to suffer. To be, although, okay, it was two different ways of looking at it. In one way, it's unfortunate to be sent away from Vaikuntha, to be sent away from devotional service. That's the worst part. In the service of the Lord, devotees leave Vaikuntha. We read in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, devotees, when Gopa Kumar was waiting his permission to enter Vaikuntha, just a technicality, he was sitting in the gateway, as his escorts told him to. And he saw many devotees going in and out. Devotees were leaving Vaikuntha, but on business, for service. They were going to preach. Even Lord Vishnu has his army. They go to fight their enemies. I don't know where they are. They're going in and out. Devotees are leaving Vaikuntha, but they're going for the service of Lord Narayan. It's different, though, when you're sent out and you're deprived of the service of Lord Narayan. That is the greatest misfortune. That's the cause of unhappiness. It's the cause of everybody's unhappiness. Bhayam dviti abhinivesha taksyat. We have to enter some realm that seems to be separated from Krishna. That is the beginning of our fearful material existence. The material existence is full of various emotions, just as spiritual life is full of various emotions. So those same various emotions are reflected in the material world, but in their upside-down, perverted form, like the reflection of a tree in the water of the lake. But it's not the real tree, it's upside down, it's imitation, it's just an image, and everything's twisted. You know, the image is not clear, it's not straight, it's distorted by the movement of the water, and so on. Anyway, it's not the real thing. So all the emotions of the material world are twisted around, distorted, and they're not real. So you cannot get real happiness from them. You can't, the mango tree reflected in the lake, you cannot take those mango fruits, the ones on the upside down tree. The fruits are there, but they're on the real tree. And by trying to pull them off the reflected tree, you won't get any. By trying to derive pleasure from the mundane masses, you will be frustrated. You have to be. You're trying to do something with the unreality. Karyakshama, the Buddhist definition of effective, of causation. Because the Buddhists don't accept that there are things. The realists, the proponents of, or the followers of Jaimini's system of logic, they believe that everything that has a name must be real, must have real existence. So you can talk about one thing being the cause of another. Even abstract things can be causes. But the Buddhists deny that there are things. So how do they explain causality? For the first 1,000 years of the history of Buddhism, they didn't try to. They didn't try to explain logic. But then, for some reason, they started to become interested in logic. Really, it had to do with the degeneration of Buddhism after the first 1,000 years, predicted by Buddha himself, that Buddhism would thrive for 1,000 years and then start going downhill. So there appeared logicians among the Buddhists, very good ones, Dignag, Dharmakirti, and their disciples, in the first century AD. That's actually only 600 years after the appearance of Buddha. Or 700 years after, 600 or 700 years after. And they, logic, there's smoke because there's fire. There can be various relationships between a logical reason and its conclusion. It can be a causal relationship. Either the cause is deduced from the result or vice versa. The result is deduced from the cause. Or there's an identity relationship. All men are mortal. Socrates is a man, therefore Socrates is mortal. That just has to do with identity. A human being is a mortal creature. Socrates is a human being, therefore Socrates is a mortal creature. It doesn't have anything to do with anything causing anything. So many logicians say that all valid inferences are based on either identity or causation. there's not much else you can found a solid deduction on in the real world. So the Buddhists, in order to deal with logic, have to deal with the problem of causation, how to explain what a cause is, cause and result. How do you explain cause and result when you don't allow the existence of any things? They have to explain it in some abstract terms of what they call karyakshamata, the capability of affecting a result, or making something happen. They don't accept things, but they do accept processes, like the modern physicists. There are things happening. There are not things happening. In English, we have to end up using the word thing. But happening is occurring. We can do it in the Bhavavacha, leaving out all nouns. Yeah. Happening is occurring. There's flux. That the Buddhists will accept. There are phenomena. There's energy flowing. What allows the energy to flow, that's causation. What allows some phenomena to occur. So they base their theory of causation on what effectively results in some appearance. I forget what PowerPoint was here. The illusion is not karyakshama. You cannot get the fruits from the upside down tree. Whereas Ambayam Dutiya Benimeshitaksya, that was it. The result of... Anyway, that was the point I was at. Let's drop that point. Sorry, I lost the chain of thought. Let's just go back up to the previous discussion of fear being... Maybe I'll figure out what I was talking about. Fear is the result of entering into a view of reality that leaves out Krishna. Dvitiya Binivesha. Of course there is variety in the spiritual realm. But everything is Krishna's energy, all the people, all the things are Krishna's energies, all the people are Krishna's devotees. Actually, there's no difference in the spiritual world. All the things are people. So everything is Krishna's, is doing Krishna's service, everybody. Nothing is separate from Krishna. That is kaivalyam, oneness, merging into oneness, merging into the oneness of spiritual variety. Where everything is engaged, everyone is engaged in Krishna's service. Dvitiyam, the realm of dvaitam, of duality, is where you try to leave Krishna out. You try to conceive of something, of a world, or even just a thing, that is not connected with Krishna. From that results fear. Fear is the basic experience of material life. There seems to be many different emotions in the material world, as they are the reflections of emotions in the material world, the perverted reflections. But just like all the things that we seem to experience and know in the material world are just permutations of three modes of nature, or the Western scientists will say they're combinations of 100 and so different atoms and molecules. We go even further and say it's all just combinations of three basic modes of nature. Everything, all the variety of things, all the things you can purchase in the supermarket or in the department store, all the wonderful things in this world are just not only piles of atoms, even more basically, they're just combinations of three basic modes. Similarly, all the emotions in the material world, unlike the spiritual world, where there is actual variety of emotions, they're not all the same. They're different tastes. In the material world, it's all the same taste. Fear. You know, fear in Madhurya Ras, fear in Bibhatsa Ras, fear in Sakya Ras, it's all fear. And it's attempts. One looks for love in order to disguise his fear, to forget the fear. One looks for friendship, because he's lonely and fearsome of that loneliness. It's all basically fear with some, you know, slight addition of something. Just like Indian ice cream is all just plain.
There's no real strawberries in the strawberry ice cream usually in India. It's just some artificial chemical. Also in the West often.
What is?
Artificial flavoring. Just some, you know, few drops of a chemical.
Why don't they use...
Because it costs more money to get the real thing, and you have to keep it from rotting. You put strawberries, you put fruits. If I leave strawberries on the table for a week, what happens to them? They get moldy and stink. So if I put the same strawberries in yogurt or something, they can also rot. It's a big problem. I put real fruit, real flavor into something, then I have to keep it from going bad. But if I just put a few drops of a chemical, it will never go bad. And it's cheaper. Okay? So it's cheaper and it stays on the shelf longer. We use artificial ingredients rather than real flavors. It's like that. All the rasas of material life is all artificial ingredients. Yeah, there's nothing real in it. There's some stimulation of the senses, but it's just artificial. Put a blindfold on and try to tell apart the flavors. There's no real difference. You know, you got red and blue, and you can call them strawberry and raspberry, but close your eyes, you won't be able to tell the difference in the material world. It's just some stimulation of the senses. It's all fear, disguised under other names. Red fear, blue fear, yellow fear, but really no real flavors there. The cause of that is thinking that there's something separate from Krishna. That is the definition of Maya given by Lord Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, speaking to Brahma, in the 4-verse Bhagavatam. Ritertam yat pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani tadvidyad atmano mayam yata baso yata tamaha. Whatever seems to be real, but at the same time, also seems to have no connection with me. You can call that Maya. That's what Maya is. There is actually nothing separate from me. But when you think that something is separate from me, that's your Maya. The Maya actually belongs to the Jiva. And then the Lord, out of his kindness, creates a world of Maya for the Jiva. But it all starts when the Jiva falls into Maya. When he starts thinking as like a crazy person that there's anything separate from Krishna. Krishna reciprocates by creating a world that seems to be separate from himself for the pleasure of the deluded, rebellious living entities. Yata baso yata tamaha. Like a shadow or like darkness? Rather, like a reflection or like a dim shadow. There can be unreality in the higher modes, goodness mixed with passion, or in the lower modes, passion mixed with ignorance. There can be dim reflection or more faithful reflection, but they're both reflections. A reflection in a mirror or just a shadow of a thing. When I see myself in the mirror, I see the features of my body and my face. I see the details. Up to a limit. The mirror has a limit of how accurate it can reflect. There's distortion in the mirror and loss of clarity in the reflected image. But that's better than just seeing my shadow, the shadow cast on the ground. The shadow has my shape, but that shape is distorted and the details are all missing. It's just a gray shadow. So material life can be experienced as a shadow or as a reflection with some details. We can be in the higher modes or we can be in the lower modes with different degrees of non-reality. All sorts of different degrees of non-reality. But it's all false because it can't really be separated from Krishna. And you can't experience a life of freedom from fear if you're separating yourself and your life from Krishna. In Krishna consciousness, reading the Bhagavatam, we can take pleasure in hearing how Jai and Vijay are going to get killed 3 times by the Supreme Lord. They're going to get smashed. And even though we're supposed to be compassionate Vaishnavas, we can take pleasure in it. Because the Lord's violence and his sweet dealings are non-different. He's all auspicious. Anything that's actually connected with him, anything that we can understand in the real way, we can understand as connected with Krishna, we can be satisfied with, we can be undisturbed by. We can even look at, not to speak of the pastimes of Jai and Vijay, their glorious fighting with the Supreme Lord, even the wretched dealings of foolish living entities in material life, what we read about in the newspapers, what we see in our own life, in the life of our families and our friends around us in the material world, even if we're avoiding it, we see other people suffering, material entanglement. We can be satisfied with it, not be disturbed by it, if we see it in relationship with Krishna. How this is Krishna acting through his material energy to correct the fallen living entities. Then it all is understood as right. Nothing's wrong. Everything's right. Of course, we don't want to be just foolish, sentimental optimists and think that everything's right in a very superficial way, but in a deep way. In a sense that everything is connected with Krishna, with Krishna's plan, with his desire, and his concern to bring the living entities back to him. Even all the confusion, violence, and misery of the material world is also right. Why would Krishna create a bad world? Why does he create anything wrong? He can't. He doesn't. He could if he wanted to, but he doesn't. He doesn't create a world where there's uncaused suffering. The suffering all has a cause. That's called our karma. And not only is there a cause for it, but where the cause originates in ourselves, our own suffering. We don't suffer someone else's karma, we suffer our own, generally. Although the karmas may overlap. You talk about giving your karma to somebody else. Just like you can do some tantric, ritual to pass on your own bad reactions to somebody else. Put it into a dog or something. Voodoo, which is also there in the Vedas, in the Atharva Veda and so on. You can try to put your disease into a dog or somebody, or a frog or somebody. But that's just that's coincidental. It's actually if that dog or frog gets my disease, it's his karma. It's something that he did in a past life that coincidentally, seems to be my karma. It's actually also his karma. It's his own fault. We don't suffer anything that's not our own fault. So even in our own life, in the miseries and confusion of our own life, we should be philosophical, not just stoic. Grit our teeth, have a stiff upper lip, and tolerate everything just because we have to. But take pleasure in the fact that Krishna is rectifying us, that this is Krishna, we are Krishna's devotees, he's taking care of us. And even getting sick, getting old, suffering what seems to be unfortunate conditions, situations in our lives, this is also Krishna's arrangement for our eternal pleasure, for our entrance into the spiritual realm where we won't suffer these things anymore. Okay, so I'll stop. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu?
You see that JVJ around the gateways of Vaikuntha? There's a story that that Lakshmi Devi wanted to come into those, wanted to come in, see Lord Narayan. And they stopped her.
Yes.
So, are they on the outer gateways or the inner gateways? Seems like Lakshmi Devi is also outside of Vaikuntha.
Well, not all the way out, because actually there's some of those details are described here in the commentaries, and Prabhupada gives some of them to us. That the four Kumaras pass through seven gateways to Vaikuntha, mm-hmm. And it's the seventh, the innermost.
Innermost.
And also those gateways will be found on all four sides. So there'll be four pairs of gatekeepers.
Yeah.
Jaya and Vijaya are on the east, which side, the eastern side? Usually they're in front of the altar. The altar is facing what? The deity is usually facing what direction? West?
The deity is facing east.
Facing east, but that's the eastern side. So that's where Jaya and Vijaya stand. But the other three pairs, they stand on other sides. I think some temples may have all eight gatekeepers. But actually you have seven sets of them. Because you have seven concentric walls around Vaikuntha.
Right.
Big Sri Vaishnava temples have that too. In Vrindavan, the Sri Rangam temple, which now we can go visit.
Really?
Yeah, it's opened. Yeah. They sent
a messenger, a delegation to Krishna Balam Temple inviting that it's open now to the Westerners.
Really?
It just means that the guy who was in charge changed his mind before he got his new guy, the new Mahant.
Right.
Or the Mahant changed his mind, whatever. Right. It was his ruling that we couldn't go in. There's nothing in their principles that wouldn't allow us. We can enter all the other Sri Vaishnava temples in India, most of them. Right. Most of them, yeah. They generally Sri Vaishnava.
No.
Lord Ranganath, lying down, I guess.
Wow, how recent was that?
A week ago or something.
Really?
No, 7 months ago.
7 months ago? I didn't hear it. Yeah. Okay, so yeah. It's open. Anyway, there's seven walls that they represent, the seven walls of Vaikuntha. You have to go through seven gateways to get in to see Lord Narayan. And Jayavijaya are on the eastern side, the innermost wall gate. So I guess Lakshmi Devi has business sometimes in the concentric areas outside the first wall.
Yeah.
That's also part of, I think that's all considered Vaikuntha.
Yeah,
this is Vishnu's house is in the innermost part.
So
just like the dham extends for a distance around Krishna's palace.
Yeah,
the palace is in the middle.
Yeah. So the argument wouldn't hold up then that they're on the border of Vaikuntha.
No, they're not. According to Bhagavatam, they're almost in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, they're somewhere in the city, maybe not right in Krishna's palace, but they're in the dham.
Right.
Vaikuntha dham.
Lakshmi Ji went to visit somebody
within
the material world
because
she has to go
in
the land.
Oh, she left
the
spiritual world,
didn't
she?
Left. And then
the Kumaras.
There are arguments. But if you're Lakshmi Ji, why are you living with Kunchpa?
Yeah. Well, actually, whenever it's said, I don't remember which Purana, but I can dig up the quote, that whenever Vishnu descends, she descends with him. Mm-hmm. So the real question is, how come you're going alone? You're supposed to go with Vishnu wherever he is. Including the material world. Now she went off to the material by herself.
Yeah,
anyway, she has her own business with her own devotees.
So, according to this verse...
But she expands herself. Like Vishnu expands himself. He's present in his original form and also expands. Yes?
According to this verse, Vishnu avatars can be called Krishna too. And
yes.
And then this argument... Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam, it's quite valid. I mean, from that side, that when we say that Krishna is just a general term for Krishna avatars.
Well, then you should read Jiva Goswami's argument against that. That is presented and then defeated by Jiva Goswami. Actually, by Rupa Goswami also, first in the Lagu Bhagavatamrita. And I don't remember the argument. Why it's not, you know, Krishna is also a generic name. Why aren't we just talking about Vishnu, when we say Krishna is the Supreme Lord, these Manus and Manuputras and others, they're Amshas and Kalas. So, Jiva Goswami, taking the technical meaning of the words Amsha and Kala, and taking the word but, you know, the meaning that there's a contrast between, you know, the Amshas and Kalas and whoever is Krishna. He deals with it very exactly. He analyzes it, and he comes to the conclusion it has to not be not Narayan but Krishna. So, I cannot give that all to you. I can't remember it all, but it's there. In brief, in the Lagu Bhagavatamrita, and in a very elaborate form in the Krishna Sandarbha. Okay, we're working on it. It'll be available in translation. It's there in the text. Rupa and Jiva Goswami's arguments against that proposal.
It's interesting, you know, the words Krishna and Vishnu are so, you know, like interchangeable. Like we just said in this verse yesterday that the sons will be killed by Krishna.
It's today's verse.
Today's verse, yeah. The sons will be killed by Krishna, and sometimes also you hear Krishna being called Vishnu.
Yes. Well, Krishna, not usually called Vishnu, maybe called names of Vishnu.
Oh, yeah, Krishna did call
Vishnu. Yeah, sometimes it's called Vishnu. Yeah, even the gopis may once in a while call him Vishnu, not too often. But they do call him the names that are usually considered names of Vishnu.
Right, right.
Kaitabari. So Kaitapa was killed by Narayan, not by Krishna, you know, in his Gokula pastimes.
Yeah.
There's no pass out of Krishna killing Kaitapa. There's Vishnu killing Kaitapa, but Krishna's called Kaitabari.
Mm.
This is also discussed by Rupa Goswami and Lago Bhagavatamita, how some of the names of Vishnu, of Krishna, describe characteristics that he shares with Narayan.
Mm.
And others describe qualities that are unique to him. And the ones that are common with Narayan, there are ways that these names are interpreted so that they also apply to Krishna. Even the name Kaitabari, there's some explanation. Yeah. It has to do with something to do with Krishna's pastimes.
Yeah.
That's in Lago Bhagavatamrita. He goes into some detail to explain all that.
Yeah.
How Krishna shares some of the names of Narayana. But here we have Krishna being also a name of Narayana. The name Krishna in this list of frequency of words in the Bhagavatam, it's the most common proper name in the Bhagavatam. It occurs 711 times, at least according to my count. More often than any other name in the Bhagavatam. And it very often refers not to Krishna, but generically to the Supreme Lord.
Right.
Or a few times at least. It's used generically in the Bhagavatam. Okay? Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.